Im Geschäftsleben erwartet man, dass der Zahlungsverkehr so einfach wie möglich ist. Und genau das ist er jetzt auch. Mit Visa Direkt. Jetzt können Sie Zahlungen zwischen mehr als 195 Ländern, 160 Währungen und über 11 Milliarden Karten, Konten und Wallets empfangen, halten, umrechnen und senden. Ganz einfach und sicher. Sorgen Sie dafür, dass Ihr Geldverkehr zu Ihrem Business passt. Weitere Informationen unter visa.com/visa-direkt. Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. I imagine you chose it. You didn't just walk in, wonder what's going on here. What's happening here? Who's this guy? Who's he talking to? I don't think I've ever heard of that guy. That's the interesting thing about when people see me post the guests on a social media platform, people are like, who? Like, that's my fucking problem? Look it up, fuck. Who? Today we got a Canadian fella on the show, Gavin Matz. He's a writer and a comedian. He's also in the cast of season 4 of Hacks, which premieres today on Max. He's got a special out called Progression, available on YouTube. And he was brought to my attention by the woman who opens for me on the road, Allie Makovsky. So I figured, okay, well, if these youngsters are, telling me what's up, let's have a conversation with this Canadian fella who enjoys it here in America. I wonder if that's changed since I've talked to him. But that aside, what's going on with you? How are you holding up? How are you adapting to authoritarianism? It's all happening so quickly, isn't it? I don't mean to trivialize anything, but sometimes you got to take a glib tone just to find yourself a bit of relief in a moment. Am I right? But it is kind of fascinating in terms of the way global politics and American culture is going. It's an amazing thing, the achievements one can accomplish with a complete lack of empathy. I don't know if that's part of any motivational speaker's system, other than, straight up fascists. But yeah, the things you can accomplish with absolutely no sense of empathy. And for most people, empathy has to be honed. It has to be engaged. It has to be worked on, especially in a world where we're self-consumed, self-absorbed, self-centered, and entertaining ourselves endlessly with algorithms that have been chosen for ourself and our desire system. Where is there room for empathy? Where is there room for considering the struggles of others when you're completely engaged in your own emotional spectrum being triggered by garbage that you let into your face? Huh? And I'm not speaking down. I'm speaking over. I'm not different than any of you. I am speaking to myself. I mean, look, I've got a dad who has dementia. And before he had dementia, my dad was always a fairly, I would say, look, I'm no psychiatrist, but I would say he was pretty close to pathological narcissism and the full spectrum of emotions that comes with that and defends what's at the core of that, which is a profound, I think, infantile emptiness and probably rage. Again, not a psychiatrist. But as he gets more demented, as that illness progresses, what doesn't go away, what's interesting is that, I don't know, look, again, I'm not a clinician and I'm not a caregiver, but it seems that what's left once all the systems start to break down and their ability to socialize and think or remember their breakfast goes away, you know, I think what's left over that still comes to the forefront is something that's probably the deepest beyond memories. It's a character trait of some kind. And with my dad, the one thing that seems to be holding on is a very deep fuck you. There's a very deep kind of rage at the edge of the void of death, the void of the injury, the trauma. Fuck you. And my dad was always one of those guys. Now, he knew his particular craft, which was surgery. He knew his skill set. He knew the world of medicine, but everything else he didn't. And I think in some ways that was always, an insecurity of his. But I think the fact that I kind of sought to be a thinker and try to engage with stuff that, you know, he needed to sort of, kind of meet me there somehow or compete with me somehow. And the way that kind of manifested was provoking me, trying to get a rise out of me, you know, instigating arguments without a counter argument, just acting out of kind of ego and insecurity and figuring out a way to push buttons. And that gave him a great deal of satisfaction. Now, I think that, look, you know, he did have a full range of emotional behavior, but usually it was a vacuum of need or a aggressive expression of pushing you away, pushing me away, whoever. But, you know, his disposition got him into a lot of trouble over his life. And what's interesting about what just happened over the last few days around, you know, this tariff chaos is that this is a guy, not unlike my father, who his sort of strength is not real strength. It's based on a profound weakness of sense of self, of ego, and also at the core of it is just a void. And at the edge of that void is, you know, whatever's left of that guy just saying, go fuck yourself. And getting whatever he wants, and then just watching it go into the void, and then just getting more, trying to fill it. So what you see in the actions, and this is, again, not a clinician, not a psychologist, is, you know, just an angry, dumb old man who is, you know, obviously politically adept in terms of manipulating people and frightening people. But I think at the core, you have a guy who's mind is slipping, who has literally all the power in the world, who at any given moment, if he's not getting all of the attention, you know, feels like he's disappearing. So every day he has to figure out how to get a rise out of the world. How do I get a rise out of the world? And not unlike my father, when all of a sudden people that he wants desperately to like him, I think for the most part, he truly doesn't give a fuck about people that don't like him, and he'll just beat on them. But the people that he wants acceptance from or wants to appear smart to, if they turn on him, or if his reflection in the movement that he started starts to get ugly, then, you know, he just retreats, you know, hey, come on. I was just, you know, fucking around, you know, I was just, you know, see, look, I got a rise out of you. But the problem is that, you know, he is the most powerful man in the world. Kinda. I think on some level, despite what he thinks, he's still sort of a puppet of people who have actually intelligently and dubiously and probably demonically, you know, achieved massive wealth. And that's really the club he has always created an illusion that he belongs to. But in terms of intelligence, he's really just a angry, you know, armchair bigot. You know, the armchair might be gilded in gold and the floors might be marble, but he's still just a guy yelling at the TV. But now he's got all the power in the world and he just wants to get a rise out of the world. A guy who is thrilled at terrifying and through negligence, probably killing his detractors because of his power. It's a horrendous charade, and it's a fucking threat to existence itself for everyone. Yeah, how are you? Nice to see you. Sorry, I talk a lot about anxiety on this show, and anxiety can take many different forms. A lot of people have heard of obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD, but many of you might not associate it with anxiety. It's just that thing where you need to be extra clean and extra organized, right? The truth is, it's a very serious condition that can paralyze people with fear and anxiety. A lot of people don't know that they have it, feel shame about their symptoms, and suffer in silence. And not every therapist understands OCD or is qualified to treat it effectively, which can make it difficult to find the right help. But OCD is highly treatable with a specialized type of therapy called ERP, or exposure and response prevention. With NoCD, you can do live virtual ERP therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in OCD. These are highly trained therapists who accept insurance and make treating your OCD more affordable. In fact, NoCD therapy is covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you relate to any of this, or if you want to help a loved one who's struggling, you can learn more by booking a free 15-minute call with NoCD. Just go to nocd.com to schedule your free call and get connected with someone who can help. That's nocd.com. Hey, I forgot to do this. Tomorrow, I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, GLC Live at 20 Monroe. Saturday, I'm in Traverse City, Michigan at the City Opera House. In Los Angeles, I'm at Dynasty Typewriter Monday, April 14th, Saturday, April 26th, and Tuesday, April 29th. Those are all at 7:30. Then Largo in L.A. for an 8 p.m. show on Tuesday, April 22nd. In May, I'm coming to Toronto, Vermont, New Hampshire, and then Brooklyn for my HBO special taping at the Bam Harvey Theater on May 10th. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all my dates and links to tickets. Yes. Getting a rise out of the world by creating chaos. Certain types of people just like pushing buttons till someone spins out and then they just watch the show. Push those buttons until things just get chaotic and untethered beyond anything you could ever expect. And just watch the show. Watch it unfold. So, outside of that, I guess, you know, things are not great here at the house with Charlie. He's kind of half a zombie. I'll deal with that when I get back from my dates. I don't think I'm going to keep him on the Prozac. As for me, I went to begin the process of getting a crown in my mouth. I've become very fascinated with dentistry. It's almost like being a jeweler. You know, the tools they work with, you know, some power tools, but some very fine, you know, fine picks and files. But, you know, I'm fascinated with root canals. I'm fascinated with the process of putting a crown on. And, you know, as you get older, you know, I have gum recession and I'm always worried about my gums. But it turns out my gums are very healthy because I'm obsessive about them. Take good care of them. The recession, it turns out, is because I have a crossbite. My bite is fucked up, has been my whole life. But with teeth, it's interesting when you look at x-rays, and now I'm going to have like one of each type of fake tooth. I've got one implant, I've got one root canal, and now I'm going to have a crown. I think I might have two crowns now. And it's funny, as you get older, you know, I was talking to the dentist about my bite, and the dental assistant was like, you know, they can still fix that. And I'm like, yeah, if they break my jaw, there was a reason I didn't want to do that in high school. That I didn't want to be the kid who has to eat through a straw with his fucking mouth wired shut. I was too vain for 6 months. Braces didn't work. But they're like, you can always fix it. And I'm like, you know what? I can't. I've lived this long. If we can just make the teeth last until the end, or put ones in there that will, I'm good. But the idea was, like, it's just fascinating to me because, like, this one tooth that I had to get a crown for had a filling in it from when I was a kid, and there was a crack along it because of my bite, which only lands on this tooth and the one on the other side. I can only chew with, like, three or four teeth, and the pressure on it was, you know, a lot for a lifetime, and there was a crack in it. So there was the outside chance that, you know, when they pulled that filling out to create the post for the crown out of the tooth I have, it might have been cracked all the way through and they would have pulled it all out. I would have needed another implant. So you're right on the edge of it, man. How's it going to go? And then the jewelry work starts happening. You get 4 or 5 Novocaine shots. Your whole fucking face is numb and they're just going at it. The smell of burning tooth from the drills. A lot of this sounds terrifying, but I'm like, you know, what's going to happen? Look at this jeweler at work. And they got to craft me this little gem of a new tooth. So they drilled out that fucking filling, and it turns out didn't go all the way through. Then they fill it up with some hardening goop to create the little post for the new piece of jewelry that is going to be in the back of my mouth. I don't know. I guess if you enter a dental situation with fascination, also just a root canal, it's like, what the fuck? Who figured that out? We want to create a post out of what's left of your tooth, but we got to file out those nerves and make them inert. On some level, dentistry can be a racket, but on that, you know, tooth by tooth basis, it's just kind of fascinating. It's very kind of delicate and nuanced, you know, work that has to be done, you know, in a very kind of small space. I think it's kind of fascinating. And I'm also, you know, now I've got a temporary crown on. I just got to hope I don't fucking swallow it. Chew on the other side of your mouth. Yeah, I'll try to remember that. Guys, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's nothing you can do about it while you have all these other responsibilities. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to hair loss treatment without even leaving your home. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. And then if you get a prescription, Hims sends it right to your door. You'll join hundreds of thousands of Hims subscribers who are able to get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/WTF. That's hims.com/WTF for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/WTF. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Okay, so Gavin Matz is here. He is in season 4 of Hacks, which is now streaming on Max. He's Canadian. This is me talking to Gavin Matz. I think it's only, we're days away from a sort of undeniable constitutional crisis.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then at least we'll all know.
Oh, I know. It sucks because, like, I've been kind of mourning, having dreams, you know?
Interesting. Mourning, having dreams.
Yeah.
Do you think...
it just seems also silly to be like...
What?
I would love to be in TV and movies.
Yeah. it is kind of weird, right? Because you start to... Like, I wonder about that. I mean, I'm on the other side of it. Like, I could leave.
Sure.
I could be done, theoretically.
Sure. I'm not. I'm kind of just only starting.
So I know.
The morning is. And yeah. I'm like.
Yeah, I know that feeling. The morning of possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I just started to think things were possible, and now.
And now you just.
It's gone. I've kind of been at the tail end of everything, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like the last generation of like weed being cool. You know what I mean?
Is
like,
weed not cool?
No, you know what I mean? Like everything has kind of become corporate as I've gotten older.
Corporate weed?
Corporate weed, you know?
Yeah.
It's just an example I was thinking because Mac Miller came on while I was driving. And yeah. I was like, oh, I remember when that came out.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's when like you'd still be like,
yeah,
smoking weed, like yeah. buying it from a guy who like...
There was a whole lifestyle to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, yeah, you'd have to go wait for the guy to stop talking.
Yeah.
Go get the weed. Mm-hmm. Then you have to smoke with him.
Yeah.
Hear the new record or whatever.
Totally.
The new CD.
Totally.
Maybe listen to him sing a little, yeah. rap a bit.
Yeah, mixtapes. I'm in the mixtape era in a garage.
Well, how old are you?
I'm 30.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know who you were. You know, you got to thank Makovsky for this.
Yeah, I 100%. I mean, Ali texted me and I was like, yeah, I would definitely, I would go on. I was like, I guess he had cancellations. He's probably supposed to talk to somebody who was on an Oscar run or something.
Yeah, and the fires fucked me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a lot of people bailed. I'm like, I better load it up.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I do like this, you know, when I started the podcast, it was like mostly... comics, and like there is a whole generation of comics I don't fucking know. I didn't know who you were, and then I watched your special, and
she
talked you up, and I thought, well, this guy seems intelligent.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this morning.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to contextualize it either. Like, what happens to show business in light of this? And there's part of me that thinks, well, Netflix will do whatever it needs to do to accommodate whoever it needs to accommodate to make their stockholders happy. So
sure. Yeah,
that'll be just another oligarchy of some kind.
I mean, these are all businesses now, too. It's just like the thing of being like punk is dead.
Well, yeah, punk is dead. But now the Republicans have somehow co-opted punk as, you know, now it's just cool to say the N-word a lot.
Of course.
And wear a hat and, you know, and be...
Oh, damn, I'm in a hat, but yeah, right
not,
now.
Not
but,
that kind of hat.
Okay, oh,
it's hard
I
to
see.
Tell with the hats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, when you see the hat and beard guys, you don't always know what team they're on.
Yeah, and I feel like dad hat is fine. Like, if you got your hat low to your head, you
sure,
know?
Okay, yeah, sure, that's good.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I see dudes, you know, wearing the flannels with the beards. I'm like, he's, you know, fuck that guy.
Oh, no.
And then they're just sort of like, hi, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
had
yeah,
no anticipation of that coming
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, you can be beta in a flannel. That's fine.
Well, it's like I did a bit about the being an alpha pussy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like beta.
Yeah.
It's called alpha pussy.
Alpha pussy. Yeah. Using words, weaponizing words in the right way to manipulate people.
Well, what do you think about it? Like, what is your thoughts in terms of why do you feel like you're not going to be able to go forward? Or is it that you're going to be up against something?
I mean, I just think, you know, talking about things becoming corporate, I feel like, you know, comedy, which yeah. I'm primarily just a stand-up. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of corporate. I mean, even this podcasting, whatever, is like, you got to have a podcast, but it's just but this isn't, I'm not
this
including
is, well,
that.
Well, no.
We're not filming this.
No, this is analog, baby. Yeah. We're old school. We're on the way out.
Yeah.
I do it the original way.
Yeah.
Before people could afford small TV cameras in their garages.
I know. You got to have a 8K camera set up.
Well, that's like, the whole thing is like, there's no, it seems to me that mainstream or old school show business is just sort of over, and they have no way of really, you know, knowing how to get audiences other than glomming on to people with a lot of followers. And then those people are like, well, we don't fucking need you at all. We've built our own show business.
Yeah. I feel like it's also just like, you know, more rich kids more than ever.
Yeah.
Like coming into the comedy space,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is supposed to be an escape for people with nothing and just
ugly
like,
people and people with nothing.
Yeah. And then that's kind of where like the crowd work and easy kind of jokes come in, I found, because it's like these people with camera setups that.
Well, all they're going for is a crowd work. But, you know, well, where'd you come up? Where are you from?
I came up in Vancouver. That's where I started. I actually, who's Sophie Buttle, who was on the show last week.
Yeah.
We lived together for like 2 years.
As a couple?
No,
just
friends in a one bedroom apartment, and I had the bedroom and she had the living room.
Yeah.
And just doing stand up.
Back when there was a club there?
Yeah, there was the Comedy Mix and the Yuck Yucks, and I was working like excavation in the mornings. And
excavation?
Yeah. Helping build a Walmart.
Oh, okay.
Just flattening the ground.
Yeah.
Real ditch digging work.
How was that for you?
I mean, terrible. I worked for my cousin who. You know,
So you're a Vancouver guy?
Yeah.
Like born and raised?
Born and raised, yeah.
Because I spent 3 months up there, and you know, I'll have this conversation over and over again because I'm waiting for my PR to come through now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, now it's kind of urgent. I'm bothering.
Well, I'm waiting for my PR to come through here. I can't leave the country right now.
You can't leave here?
Yeah, because I'm waiting on my green card.
For, oh, you mean if you leave, you won't be able to come back?
Yeah, my, no, if I leave, I forfeit my petition.
If you leave America?
Yeah.
So you're waiting for your green card from America?
Yeah.
And if you go back to Canada, even for a vacation?
Yeah, I can't right now. I'm still just even waiting on my travel papers and, like, you know, which they didn't cut the, what is it, the USCIS? That's not one of the
what is that?
The government, whatever, immigration.
Oh, okay.
That hasn't, like, lost funding, which is nice. And I've been reading about it on Reddit.
Yeah.
So people are still getting their petitions coming in. Like, like as Trump's being inaugurated, they're like, thank God I got my green card. I'm not so worried because I'm white and look like this. I don't think ICE is coming for us, going to knock down.
Well, no, not ICE. But what if I mean, there is a fear of, like, he'll just lock us all in. But you kind of want to be here. From my fear is, like, what if they lock us all in and I can't get out?
Yeah, I got to get on a sitcom, Mark. Lock me into NBC.
Sitcom? Are you going? Do you have a time machine?
Yeah, I'm joking.
They do make them, though, dude.
Yeah.
There are these sitcoms where I'm like, who the fuck is watching it? And it's the people that still watch television like
hey,
that.
Hey, man, I sent in a tape to be Tim Allen's son.
Like, did you?
I'd get on Tim Allen's new show, you know? He's a mechanic now.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's salt of the earth, this guy.
You're kidding, right?
I'm not. I'm completely serious.
Tim Allen's back?
He never left.
He was just
last
always
man
kind of
standing.
There. Well, now, like, that they're the dominant voice in culture, I guess he can proudly be that. He shouldn't have any problem now, right?
Yeah, this is also my problem, is, like, this is what's popular, but I'm, like, especially comedy, I'm like, that's supposed to be counterculture, so I just, like... Why is that popular? Why are you doing that?
Who?
Just everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. It's not even like a who or a what. It's everyone is like aligned that way. No one evolves anymore.
Well, it sounds like you have some standards. Where'd you get them? I mean, when you were coming up, like you're 30. How long have you been doing it?
11 years.
Yeah. So you're a punk.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because you're like, I feel like just beginning, but it's as everything crumbles. But
it always kind of feels like that, though. Now it's the world, though. Before, when I started, it was comedy in general.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, at that time, you know, it was after the boom in the 80s.
Right,
so there was
this,
like, the 80s comedy boom. And every club you'd go to, the guy would be like, I don't know what's going on. Last week was packed, you know, and you don't know what week they're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It had died. You know, and it was dead for a long time. And there was not a big club thing, and the sort of, you know, road headliner thing had kind of stopped. So comedy was dead, but that is the opposite now.
I don't think so. I think it is dead on it. Like, clubs are dead, unless you're in, like, a city where people go to them, like in New York or something. Like,
right.
You know, like... But I think if you go anywhere, clubs kind of dead. Like, because the people that are big acts, they don't do clubs anymore. Whereas they used to just go to do clubs,
right.
And then you'd be like in the club, you'd be like, who's that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, they do 4 or 5 shows in a week.
Yeah.
And now if they've got the juice, they can just do one night at the theater or two shows at a theater.
Or an arena. So.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
They want to go see someone at an arena.
I don't know what that is.
I've never wanted to see someone talk there.
Have you ever been to an arena show? Have you ever been on one?
I've never been on one.
Yeah.
I've never been on one, but I've been to one for fun.
Who? Oh, really?
Yeah.
A comic?
I've been to a couple for fun. I'm going to one even in March for fun. I'm going to go see Sebastian.
At the arena?
Yeah.
Do you like arena shows?
No.
Isn't it just a bunch of people watching the monitor?
I've seen Kevin Hart in an arena.
Why?
I just think it's funny.
To know what it is?
Just to go there and be like, I mean, that's what most people going to a show and they're like, I'm going to see him in arena. They just think that's like the biggest stage they can see that person on. So I think the environment itself is fun.
Well, I never understood the appeal, though.
There is none.
But like, why do they all go?
I don't know. I'd rather see somebody pop into like a 60-seat place.
Or do like, you know, an hour in a like a reasonable size venue. Where there's a sort of intimacy to it.
Of course, where I'm like feeling like I know the person.
Yeah, or that you can at least connect with a crowd that size.
Of course. And when anyone that's like, they can even connect in an arena, I'm like, well, they're lying to you. And you're easily lied to.
I guess, but you have to, your whole pace changes. Everything, you know, has to have this, you know, everything has to be pretty big. And I just don't know what the experience is. And, you know, and I like some of those guys. I don't mind Sebastian.
You know, I'm not shitting on him.
No, I know.
I think he's funny.
You know, he does a, you know, he puts a lot into throwing those jokes out there, a lot of physicality. He's like an athlete.
Yeah, not a lot of people. I can't do that. I could.
He has to wind up.
I barely am moving.
I'm
barely moving.
But Nate doesn't move much. He does arenas.
That one.
I guess people like to be part of a big thing and you know, and just listen to a guy talk. I mean, when you go to see Kevin, is it like a rock show?
I saw him like when I was still in Vancouver. I went.
Are they like hooting and hollering? Are they listening?
No, it was a bad show until he went on.
Oh yeah,
and he had a lot of openers.
They seem to bring a ton of openers. Totally. It's like a one guy and nine guys doing 2 minutes.
Even like I live in New York now, but last week I went to a show at Madison Square Garden that my friend gave me tickets to see people play Dungeons and Dragons live, sold out Madison Square Garden. But it was called D20, and it's actually like...
Are you a D&D guy?
No, I'm not, but I went and the vibe was good. I did not know what was going on, but like it was really positive and like...
Well, D&D nerds are not part of the bad, they're not the enemy.
Yeah, no. I was like, it's probably the opposite of when Kill Tony was in MSG.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
So like what are they, they're wearing the costumes or what are they doing?
Some people are in costumes. They're the people on it in D20. They're a part of this thing called Dropout, which is just like improv. It's
okay.
Like they're from College Humor. So they're all like people that have been doing improv and sketch comedy for a long time.
So the D&D becomes a framework for the improv.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fun, but they're just like all seated down. There's nothing really to it, but I like going to shows like that.
They're not
that.
Moving?
They're no, just they're sitting like this.
They're just playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Dude, it sold out Madison Square Garden?
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening.
I don't either.
I
might get a Cybertruck. You know what I mean? I'm crazy.
What do you think is happening? Is it, like, I mean, it's clear that people are craving some kind of communal event.
Of course.
Right? And that this is something they do with their friends. Maybe they listen to a podcast, but I guess they're just going to be part of this community.
Yeah, people were preemptively cheering for things that I didn't know were coming.
And how would you know?
I know, before they
roll the dice?
Yeah, like they like, or they would say something, and I guess that would remind them of something that happened in a previous episode and their storylines.
Holy fuck.
And I'm just like, that's nice. I'm glad people have that.
Yeah.
You know?
I know, but you would think, isn't there a way to get people moving in more, like, I guess it's socially proactive, but when you think about politics and stuff, it's like, how come that, we're the good folks who can draw big with the politics.
Yeah.
We're the people facilitating possible change in the world that can make a compelling Madison Square Garden appearance.
I don't know.
God damn it.
I don't know. But there was a improv riff on hedge fund managers and crypto, and everyone in the audience booed.
Oh, good. Well, there you go.
So something I think happened. They kind of align politically.
We're moving
we
forward.
We get people to believe in us through Dungeons and Dragons.
So the anti-corporate, there's an anti-corporate nerd contingency within the D&D community that might actually help us out.
100%.
Oh, good to know.
That's what I'm here to tell you about today in this lost episode.
This lost episode? This is not a lost episode.
No.
But you're in Vancouver, and I guess when you live there, there is a limit to it remaining exciting or you wanting to stay there. There was just no future comedically there?
I mean, I don't know. I was never like thinking about that, but I just like kept doing stand-up and I was doing it all the time. And I was coming down and trying to visit LA with like what money I had once I turned 21. And then in 2017, I won Canada's Top Comic, and that gave me like $25,000, and that's how I got a visa. And then I was just like, okay, I'm going to go like rough it, you know?
2017, Canada's Top Comic.
Yeah.
How does that work?
It was like a competition with Just for Laughs, where it was like to get to the finals, you like, there was a first round, and that got you voted into a voting round, and then the voting round got you into a top eight, and then the top eight performed at Just for Laughs in Toronto at Queen Elizabeth Theater, and then you did like a 7-minute set.
And who were you up against?
Kathleen McGee, who is a great comic who just passed away. And
she passed away.
Yeah, she had cancer for a while, but she's very funny.
Yeah.
And Kelly Taylor, Kyle Bottom, some just Canadian comics that you know.
They don't leave.
There were that. No, I think they would try to, and I think they were quite mad, honestly, at me because I was the youngest one there, and I was kind of being like, being a little jerk.
Were you?
Yeah.
What style? Just cocky?
You know, just like, this doesn't matter.
Oh, diminishing,
diminishing
the event
diminishing
for the people that who thought it was the biggest night of their life.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy.
Real regret on that kind of behavior. But
the buzzkill guy.
Not a buzzkill. I mean, fun for me.
You guys don't realize, like, even though I won, it's not a big deal.
Before that.
Oh.
But I was doing it. I think I was trying to do some kind of... You know, you get in some kind of like, yeah, exactly.
You're trying to keep your own shit together and then, you know, not consciously undermine the other people.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, but I mean, I was 23, so I...
But why'd you get into comedy? Who were the people that, like, you know, what drove you there when you were a kid? Like, what'd you grow up with? You had a lot of...
There was this John...
Big family?
I have two younger sisters and an older sister, and then my mom. I had a lot of cousins because my mom is like the youngest of like 12.
Oh my god!
So I was like
all Canadian.
They're all Canadian.
Deep Canadian, like generations of Canadians.
No, my mom's dad was British, and then my mom's mom was like French Canadian. I don't know a lot about my dad's side of the family.
What happened to that guy?
He's around. He's a good guy. You know?
Are they together?
Yeah, they're together.
Oh, well, yeah. You're talking about him like he's out of the picture.
No. I just don't know a lot about his family because, I mean, they had a falling out when I was really young.
The whole family?
One of his brothers sided with his parents, and then his other two brothers, they're still close.
Oh, okay.
But they're all over the place in BC. Yeah.
What'd he do?
He worked, they're all kind of fishermen. He worked for Fisheries and Oceans Canada, my dad. And then my uncles are like fishermen and contractors.
Like out in the boat?
Yeah, out in the boat. Like my Uncle Murray Moose, I call him.
Yeah.
He lives in Alert Bay, which is like deep Vancouver Island. Like
really?
Far, far east.
And he's got a boat?
Yeah, I got a little yellow boat if it's still the same one.
Yeah.
My uncle's got the same boat he's had for a while, my Uncle John.
And they're both fishermen.
Yeah.
And they go out and they fish and then they bring their fish to market?
Yeah, and they like smoke fish. They make, my Uncle John used to have a deli.
Yeah.
And that, I remember that was like my favorite thing as a kid, going to his deli.
Yeah.
Yeah, he makes such good like...
He just
sausage and
really,
yeah, they're real like salt of the earth, like good guys.
He smokes his own fish and makes his own sausage.
Yeah,
at a deli.
Yeah,
where you could buy it by the pound or eat it in house.
Yeah, and he made sandwiches.
Right,
and
yeah,
you'd go in and I had the Nepo hookup. I would get free Pepsi. You know what I mean? It's a good time.
Could go behind the counter.
Oh yeah. My mom worked as like his like bookkeeper for a while in like the attic of the deli.
My God,
yeah.
This seemed like the future. Why not that future? What the fuck is wrong with you? You can still go back, dude.
He sold the deli, you know,
What, this was on Vancouver Island?
No, this was in like Langley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he lives kind of out in Fort Langley, kind of Alder Grove area now. And he would like, he's like building houses. And
so he got out of the fishing racket?
Yeah, but they still fish and they go up every year to this place, Winter Harbor, and they have like a trailer there.
But the fish that he smokes, does he catch them?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's the fucking life.
It is the life.
Like, that's why I'm going to Canada now, like, because I just been recently, hope I can go. I don't know. I just want to have options, dude.
Of course.
But that sounds pretty good.
I always say, I'm like, I should have been a fisherman. I always say that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know if I'm too old to get into the racket.
No.
Like, but I don't know if I'm too old to, you know, get a boat and learn the things, but maybe I could do it in a leisurely way.
Yeah, that's...
Maybe I could go out, catch some fish, smoke them, hang out, have a friend over.
Yeah, well,
try this fish.
I mean, I remember I used to go out on like long trips with them and
on the boat?
Yeah, we'd go, well, we'd go on a fishing trip for like a week and we'd spend every day like on the water. And,
yeah.
And they'd play like Kid Rock before it was problematic. And we'd, I remember catching big fish to Kid Rock playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just out there in the ocean.
Out there in the ocean.
Did you see like whales?
Porpoises, whales.
Really?
Yeah, orcas, all that.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
I don't. I don't know. I need to get on Tim Allen's show. I don't know.
Is that why you're out here?
No. I'm out here doing a little. I just finished yesterday a little part on the new season of Hacks.
Oh, that's good.
So I've been coming out here doing that.
What's that part?
I'm a writer in Deborah's
on the
writer,
show
on Deborah's
in the writing room.
Yeah. So it's pretty relaxed part. It's the longest I've ever been on a thing.
How long were you on it?
Since the beginning of October.
Yeah.
On and off.
Yeah.
And then.
So you're in the writer's room of the new show that she's, that, what's her name's hosting?
Yeah. Which I think I could have said.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that that's what's happening. You don't have to tell. I'm not going to ask you what the dynamics were.
Yeah.
Or what makes it an exciting season.
Yeah.
Or what Hannah's character is doing.
Yeah. I have some stuff with Hannah and.
She's great.
Yeah. Hannah's the best.
So it's interesting. You're really kind of doing it the old way. Like, you know, you're doing the comedy. You seem serious about it. You have a point of view. You're like, fuck the man. But you're like, but the man needs me.
Yeah, yeah. You can't, I can't, you know, in capitalism, I can't completely separate in this. You know what I mean? I am a cog in the machine.
I never was able, like, I never had a handle on auditioning or acting. I was always yelling. There was no way I was going to fit on a sitcom. So, like, despite wanting to do it, I was just not, it was not going to happen.
Yeah, it's never like come my way. Like, I mean, I've done a couple things. I mean, this is the longest, but I'm just like, you know, and for that reason, you just focus on stand up, but I don't want to like post really.
Post and your stand up?
I don't want to do it how everyone's doing it. I mean,
what you mean like crowd work?
Yeah, sure. Just like, you know, just the constant social media of it all.
So it's a full-time job.
I feel like I bite myself in the foot sometimes by doing that, but I kind of just like doing stand-up and working on it on my own, and then maybe, I mean, you know, work hard and people will see it.
But yeah, yeah.
Even with the special, which like I couldn't have done that without All Things Comedy or like Burr helping.
Where like, did he see you?
I'd done... the show that he did, The Ringers, on Comedy Central, and I did a set on that, and then I just had a relationship with them, and I pretty much just like sent what I was working on at the time, and was like, and then they gave me money to shoot an hour,
and where'd you do that?
In Vancouver, at this place called the Biltmore. It's a little rock club.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there was no kind of. Sort of effort to be like, yeah, it's a show. You just kind of come out. It seemed like there was a few people there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a few people there. It's all the second show because the first show was awful. But
what happened?
Just getting heckled by this lady who used to cut my hair.
The whole show?
Yeah.
Couldn't shut her down?
I tried, but eventually it's just like no one was kicking her out. It was during like Just for Laughs. And there was it wasn't like a comedy club or anything. So.
Oh, so you did it during the festival?
Yeah.
So you got the festival pull?
Yeah.
But you knew the woman?
Yeah, I knew the woman, yeah.
And she fucked up your whole first show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you got that all on tape and you had to, in between shows, you had to be like, God damn it.
I mean, I fully like Marriage Story punched the wall. I was losing it.
Yeah.
But then the second show, it works and I like it a lot. I'm glad I have it. And I'm like, it did what I wanted it to do. And it works with the title and I'm just happy with it. And
what was it? Progression?
Progression.
Yeah. So what was the idea? You had an idea? You had a theme?
Yeah. I have an idea for like, you know, the future, if that ever happens to do a little like, you know, Kanye West 4 tied together. Kind of things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there's going to be several progression and then...
And then the one that I want to do now, which I feel like, because I taped that like 2 years ago, I finally have like, I think what I've improved on, I'm trying to do another one that like matches that kind of, you know, progression of style or whatever called present and just more in the moment. And
okay. Yeah. So it's sort of like a James Acaster idea,
didn't Yeah, I like him a lot. Yeah. I feel like he might be, and like, there's only like a couple people who really think about what they're doing on like the grand scale of like
doing
their body,
stand-up.
Their body show. Of right. work, you know?
Yeah, I did a series of albums. One was called Not Sold Out.
Okay.
The other one was called Tickets Still Available.
Okay.
And then the third one was Final Engagement.
Okay.
Now, I don't, because I was done.
You quit.
Well, no, I
you were done with that.
You know, it felt like the last. It always feels like the last one to me. And Not Sold Out was literally like 60 people. And it was right after 9/11.
Whoa.
At Stand Up New York. And I just had a guy who had a DAT recorder do it. And we put that out. That was the first CD. And it was like, it was reissued later. But it was, you know, it was a very loose, fucked up show. And then Tickets Still Available, I did in Seattle at what was that place
called? The Underground.
Yes. Yeah. Was it The Underground?
There was The Underground is the one place that I knew that I did it a couple of times right before it closed.
Terry?
Yeah, I think so. In the basement, kind of like
no,
in
that
the downtown.
Was that was better. That was why am I forgetting?
Oh, Laughs then maybe.
Not Laughs. It was the other one, and now I'm spacing it out. Like Terry used to own the club. He'd sell the tickets. He'd serve the drinks. He'd open the show, and then he'd try to rip you off. I can't remember what the fucking name of the club was. Why is this happening? But it's a horrible little club, but it had low ceilings. It was all right. And mm-hmm. and I just called him. I said, I need to make a record. And we did that there, and it wasn't sold out. And then the last one, Final Engagement, same thing. I was just out of, my wife had just left me. And I was like, all the shit was very loose. I was very angry. And I was, heartbroken and just full of fucking hate. Not really hate, just anger.
Raw emotion.
Raw, right. So I laid that down over four shows. None of them were sold out. And they're out there. And Louis Katz said that Final Engagement, really saved his life. It helped him out.
Wow.
Yeah, so I delivered, for one guy.
Yeah, that's kind of all you want, right? You want one person. I mean, like, I had one person I'm cool with. I don't need an arena.
No?
No. Yeah, because when I got familiar with you, obviously, I'm a bit younger than Louis, so
yeah.
I missed those. And, like, but Thinky Payne.
Oh, yeah. That was one, that was of that ilk.
Yeah.
Where, like, it was before Netflix was a thing. It was just an hour and a half of kind of half-thought-out stuff.
Yeah, I remember watching that. I was like, man, it was like right when I was like getting into comedy.
You're like, anyone can do this.
No. I was like, man, he's just going to sit down right away. I was like, this is fucking blowing my mind. He sat down right away. When's he going to get up?
I got up a couple times.
Yeah, you did.
That was a decision, dude, sitting down. Like, I was like, I did my share of running around.
Look, I tried it for a while. I think
you couldn't hold it?
No. I mean, off of, that's your influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, what I noticed was that there were a couple, it happened later in my career because, you find that like when you're walking around, especially if you're doing, you're trying to grab them, mm-hmm. like, and you feel this compulsion to kind of, move back and forth. I'll do some pacing, still at the Comedy Store. But I found that sitting down, if you don't freak out, it draws the attention differently.
Totally.
And, if you can hold that, it's your own space. And you don't feel like you're running around trying, it seemed desperate.
I know. It does. I do things that are grounding on stage, like grab the mic stand behind me, kind of like lean back on it sometimes. But that has gone not my way a couple times where the mic stand snapped at the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's happened to me at the Stand in New York a couple times. And I think I owe them a couple mic stands, but I'm trying to avoid
it. It's sad when the one thing you need up there fucks you.
Yeah.
And then you're embarrassed. You're just trying to be cool.
Oh, trying to be cool and then be just, listened to.
And yeah, then,
and then they're like, this guy doesn't even know who he is or what he's doing.
And we saw the mic stand breaking opened the portal into his vulnerability.
There's not even a fourth wall. There's a fifth, a sixth.
He's scrambling. He's drowning up there.
Literally, he's holding the mic stand, no bottom. Just a real metaphor for his life and decisions.
You make the joke, but you've still been upstaged by things out of your control.
I know. And nothing will ever be better than that.
No.
For the audience.
Back when he could smoke, my hair caught on fire on stage. That was a big moment.
Oh, that's a huge moment.
Because I had really long hair and I used to flip it back. And I did it with a cigarette in my mouth. And I'm just doing my joke. And the front row was like, dude. And my hair was on fire.
Oh, man.
And it's hard to come back from that. I mean, you know, it's vulnerability. I mean, they felt good that I got it out.
Yeah.
But it was a bad moment.
You kind of just got to close and leave after that.
No, you kind of just sit in it. Sit in the fucking embarrassment.
Man,
that's all we're trying to fight, isn't it?
Yeah. You kind of got to own it. It's so hard.
The whole reason we get in this, it's a war against being embarrassed.
Yeah.
And so when it happens, you got to be like, take the hit. Yeah. Let's see if we can crawl out of this. Don't run away, man.
Yeah, I try not to isolate myself from the audience, but I tend to, you know?
Yeah, like when you're up there?
Real sometimes us, me against you thing that I've slowly gotten rid of.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah.
Like people talk about how like people do stand up because they want to be loved. I'm like, that might be true, but not for that long.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a minute or two.
Yeah.
And then kind of throw something in. Yeah, you do kind of do
I'm
that.
I'm like, don't clap at that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like
and I actually change completely from smiling to don't.
Yeah, yeah. What is that? I don't know what that is. Or else you do a joke that everybody likes and then you're like, all right, well, how about this one?
Yeah.
You don't like me so much anymore, do you?
Oh, I hate when I'm like, now I have to close. I'm always like, why do we have to build to that?
You don't. A lot of guys don't do it anymore. It's old school.
Yeah.
I think you should probably have a closer.
I mean, the cellar, you have to like close.
The cellar, you have to close every joke.
Yeah, you have to.
You can't. There's no.
You have to. I mean.
You can't have any weak moments at the cellar.
No. I mean, so you have to. I've been working there for like a year, but I sometimes can feel like I don't fit in there at all. And I'm like,
me too.
But I want to work there because I do need the cash.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
Yeah.
And the stage time doesn't
and
hurt
the stage
either.
Time I love. And I love the rooms. Like,
I guess I do. I mean, I'm 61 and I still feel that. When I go there, I feel like, oh, fuck. Is Esty here?
Yeah.
I'm me.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to Todd.
Barry, sure.
Yeah.
Of
and
course.
He'll be like, she can give me any spots.
She can give me any spots.
She gave me all the bad spots. And I'm like, I can't, how long am I going to do this?
I'm too proud to deal with that shit.
Yeah.
I can't.
Like, and Todd is like.
He's so funny.
He's like my favorite.
You love Todd.
I love Todd, dude. Medium energy was like my shit. Like, and I told him that and he was like, really? You know? And I'm like, yeah, man. I was like, you remember there's a part of that album where you're like riffing with the crowd and you just say, wet candy. And he's like, and I said that like as a teenager, wet candy. I used to always say that. And I brought it up to him. He's like, he acted like he didn't know me. You know, he's like, I don't remember that at all.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, what? This was like formative. Like,
we started together. We used to wander around. Him and I used to wander around the village, just be like, why can't we get spots?
Yeah.
But you know, like there used to be a club called Catch a Rising Star, and the guy who ran it was this guy, Louis Ferranda, and he would just sort of randomly pick who would go on.
Oh, I know Louis is around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He works for the festival now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But he used to be the bartender, and then he became the booker of like this big club. And guys would just sit up there and wait for hours to see if he would throw them on, you know, usually after the audience had left. And I just couldn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't let that guy have power over my life.
Yeah. Fuck that. You got to get out of there.
Yeah. And it was the same with the cellar. You just like, after a certain point, you're like,
don't
fuck
tell
it.
Me I have the juice.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me this way.
No.
You know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When someone's like, you got, you're
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're good.
You got, fuck off. Why?
Yeah. So what are you going to do with all this fight? You're just going to keep plugging along?
I guess until I explode.
What is the presence? What's the idea for the next special?
You know, just about that time, present.
Yeah.
Moment.
Yeah.
Memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your fears right now for like, you know, in terms of what's going on politically? Why do you think, how do you think it's going to affect show business, or is it just going to affect you?
I think it affects me because I care about people.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a crazy thought. I don't think a lot of comedians think like that anymore.
Well, but I think a lot of guys are a lot more adept at the business and they get into it to make money, which was never my thought.
Yeah. Because I'm still like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was just on a show for like 5 months and I'm like, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I was going to get on TV and I'd be rich.
Yeah. No, didn't work out.
You always think things are going to be different.
And then you got to get the next one.
And then you're like, no. And then it's just this. And I'm like, you got to keep going and going and going.
I know.
You got to join SAG. You know what I mean?
So now you're in. You probably made enough money to get a little insurance coverage.
Yeah. And then you're like, with stand up, you're like, oh, you got a tour.
Yeah.
Like I did that when I did the last one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't again until it's better.
Well, do you draw?
In like Chicago and like in five places.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm happy with that. I love going to those places where I draw.
Right.
But I'm like, I mean, when I was touring this, which I wasn't really touring, I went like kind of old school and was doing like one-nighters in like Danville, Kentucky for like 20
people. For progression?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was out there staying with divorced guys all over the country, crashing on couches, recently divorced.
Yeah.
They got a couch to spare.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just bombing everywhere.
Really?
And I'm just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Driving 5 hours.
To bomb for an hour?
Yeah.
But it got you tough? You still believed in it?
Yeah. I was like, this is good. And when I would do it and it had like a crowd, I'd be like, okay, great. I'm like, I like this.
Well, that's like a tough road to hoe when you do it a specific way and you're not going to waver. Is that like, you don't got a second gear that you're going to kick into to sort of get everybody on board.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything like, I don't think what I'm doing is like revolutionary where people are going to be like, holy shit, you got to see this guy. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm just another guy.
Yeah.
It's not like some new sound.
Well, it can be, but your pace is sort of like, well, now that I know you like Todd, who were some of the other slowpokes that you liked?
Hannibal.
Yeah.
Hannibal.
Early Hannibal?
Yeah, like, the John Doerr had this show that was on, that was like all filmed at Just for Laughs, and that's kind of how I like saw everybody that I liked. Like, Chelsea Peretti was the first stand-up I ever saw live.
Yeah.
Saw her open for Aziz. My mom got me a ticket as my graduation present from high school.
Yeah.
It was the first show I went to. It was just one ticket.
Yeah.
To Aziz.
Yeah.
And I went and I watched and Chelsea opened and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
They have openers.
That was it.
Like, wow. I was like, she's so funny and like dry and like slow.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah. You knew it could be done.
I was like, it was just like mind opening.
And that
I
was still before you did open mics?
Yeah, that was before I did open mics. I didn't do one until like a year later.
Yeah.
When I like figured out you could do that.
Yeah.
In the bottom of Goldie's Pizza.
Yeah, Goldie's Pizza.
Marlo Franzen.
Yeah, who's that?
He had stuff like, I'm an actor. You might have seen me in the Titanic. I played the boat.
Yeah.
You might have seen me in Apollo 13.
Yeah.
I played the moon.
Yeah.
He's a big fat guy.
Oh, right.
So his bit was.
Oh, it was fat stuff.
Yeah, it was very.
And he hosted that show?
Yeah.
And you go on, there was nobody there, or was it pretty packed?
There's some comics, and that was it.
Yeah.
And there was like three mics there a week.
And you got the bug, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the bug, and that was it. And there's no like grand story when people ask you. I'm just like, yeah, I just started doing it and then I was doing it.
Were you like a Hedberg guy?
Yeah, well, I liked Hannibal first.
Yeah.
And then.
Then you go back to
Hedberg.
And
then you go back and you're like trailing through and you find people and like, yeah, all that stuff. But yeah, it's very Hannibal. And I was like, people were like, obviously say Hedberg to me, but I was like, I didn't know who that was. And then I went back to it.
And you found it. And you're like, that's what invented Hannibal?
Yeah, of course.
But then Hannibal became sort of like a musical act and a freak and a weirdo. And
sure.
He changed his pace.
Sure.
He changed everything.
I mean, that is kind of what progression is about, is like, I'm like recognizing these things and like, I mean, like finding, like you're getting to your own style through that.
Well, it's interesting because he got so much attention, early on, and he definitely had a different style.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's wearing a shiny suit and he's doing music.
Yeah.
And he's like, his pace has changed. It's like almost like he came out of his shell. Like, what made him famous was his nervous kind of defense mechanism or his sort of just trying to socialize.
Yeah.
And then, like, all of a sudden, now he's, like, this big act.
Yeah, and now he, like, he's reopening, like, the knitting factory and stuff.
Is
like,
he?
Yeah. He's a cool guy. I've never met him, but, like...
Oh, yeah, when I talked to him, it was a crazy story. Just him, like, sleeping on the subway and driving around, you know, on the subway for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he really paid his dues, but it's interesting when someone's style changes that much. I mean, I feel like... On this tour, because of the world and because of my audience, you know, I've had to figure out some other approach in some way.
In what?
In how I present the act.
Okay, so you're not like Doomsday.
Well, I am sort of Doomsday, but there's a, now that it's happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it feels like everybody's sort of in shock.
Boiling frog.
Yeah, kind of. But just sort of like they're like traumatized and it doesn't feel like it feels like it's over. So like I have to approach it like, you know, there's one thing to sort of like call something out with anger in resistance when you feel like there's fight left. But like right now, maybe it'll change in a few months. I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's fight. It feels like there's just this PTSD and this sort of weird kind of shock. So, like, going into it, like, I've started to be more like, look, you know, we're all in the same boat. You know, it's bad. I don't mm-hmm. know if I have solutions. I can reflect on my feelings about it. But I can also then from there just try to be entertaining in the moment that we're in. And I'm not a guy that generally thinks about entertaining. But then all of a sudden I started to realize, like, well, maybe... You know, you can set up where we're at and then just entertain within that.
Yeah.
As opposed to be like, you know, I know the answers or fuck these people or whatever. Like the people I have, my audience, you know, they're a fragile bunch and they're grown-ups and they're sensitive and they're most of them are progressive. So, you know, I can kind of weave in the doom.
Of course.
But then kind of like try to lift up a little.
Yeah. I mean, I do think now probably it's an important time to push back on, you know, what's happening. And I think that's important. I think people will find comfort in that.
You push back in the way that, you know, you can live your life. And that's going to be on some level, if you think a certain way, an actual act of resistance. Is that you can't buckle to this wave of fucking, you know, pseudo-macho fucking fascist garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to show up in your life in the way that you feel is right. But I think a lot of people even think that's frightening. So that's the tricky part. It's that you live in these towns, they have neighbors, they don't fucking know. And all these people are emboldened. So, you know, sensitive people just go in, they go in themselves and they just mind their own business. So I kind of like talk about how, well, you have to continue to stand up in your life, you know, so someone's got to hold the line and you can't just, you know, wither away.
No.
But it's hard, dude.
Yeah.
It's really, we're getting this, you know, front row seat to see how this propaganda brain fuck works on people.
Yeah. It's so, I mean, I actually, like, with misinformation, I always thought it would be pretty obvious what is and isn't.
Yeah.
And it's not.
No, because the phones have, like, and the sort of algorithms have locked people in to a belief system that is reaffirmed constantly.
And I felt like TikTok was really pushing people, like, at least from, like, what I've seen on there and what everyone's talked about, it felt, like, so informative.
Yeah.
You know? For like 2 years.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was like kind of mobilizing like people my age and even like, you know, younger than me in like a way that like I'd never seen before, you know?
Yeah.
And then for that to be like, I've seen a switch in it since it's like shut down.
Yeah.
To where it's quite obvious that.
That's been used as a brain fuck machine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's going to be.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I felt like before it was more open.
Yeah. But openness, depending on who's flooding the field.
Yeah, Zuckerberg.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So you're just going to what? Fuck the man?
Yeah, man, fuck the man. Fuck this shit. I just want to do stand-up. But I'm joking when I'm repeating you say that, but yeah, I don't know. I care. I'm like, I have things I want to do.
Yeah. Like what?
Just what I'm doing, you know? And I don't want that to stop.
So in terms of like,
sorry,
you know, where, what one has to do to get out there, you don't have the wherewithal to feed the beast, the content beast?
Not the content beast, but you know, there's other things. I want to act. I like your career a lot.
Yeah.
I like things you've done.
Yeah.
Like you're good in the order.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. You know,
I studied that guy. I knew who that guy was.
That movie was good.
And my fear was being that guy. So I thought if I acted as that guy, maybe it would get me out of the way.
Man,
of that guy.
It was great. I thought it was great.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I love that movie. Saw that at like late 11 p.m. showing at Angelica, you know, the one in New York with the train underneath it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Down on Houston?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the acting thing, it was something I always wanted to do, but it didn't look like it was going to happen. And it didn't happen until I was in my 40s, where, you know.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Now I'm trying to figure it out. Did you study acting?
No.
You're just doing it?
No, I always wanted to do it. And I always wanted to, I just didn't know. I mean, stand-up, I guess, is my way in. But I never knew you could do any of this stuff. I didn't grow up in I did drama in grade 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my sister, she had a friend that was acting, and I remember picking her up from her friend up. My mom picked her up from Stanley Park. She was in a Nesquik commercial.
Yeah.
You know the Nesquik bunny?
Yeah.
And there was like cameras and stuff, and I was pretty young, and I was like, I want to do that. And my mom's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then that was kind of like it. I was like, can you do that?
Did you do any?
No.
No? And now it's happening.
Yeah.
Do you write shows? Are you developing shit?
Yeah. Yeah.
You sell them?
I had a movie that it was in development at Columbia for like a couple of years ago, and it kind of fell apart. And then I just had one fall apart because somebody dropped out. And trying to take a show out, make a show.
Yeah.
Try to reach young men.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's your angle on that?
Just show normal. I feel like a lot of television hasn't ever shown like normal
dudes,
like, guys, even though it's like under the guise of like, I'm a businessman. I'm like, you know what I mean? There's never anything that's like true or real to like me and my friends. So yeah. I'm like, you know, pretty much like, what is our girls? You know what I mean?
Right. And what does that look like? You think you've got a handle on it?
I think I do. I think I'm pretty like, I think I have like my finger on like,
it's kind of a weird generation. I wouldn't know how to characterize it.
I mean, yeah, the in-betweens of like millennial and Gen Z is like, it's kind of, it's a weird like lost years. You know?
I find. You were on Rami's show too?
Yeah, I did a little, yeah, he threw me a little bone.
And you know that guy?
Yeah, I know that guy.
Those guys are doing, like him and Mo are doing good shows.
Mo is great.
Great.
Mo is awesome.
Yeah, I just watched the second season of his show.
You finished it? I only got through the, I've only watched
it. Because I had to talk to him.
Okay, great.
Yeah, sweet guy.
Yeah.
But you know that
I saw him talk in we drove down to DC. I think it must have been like November. I mean, when he was at that protest in DC, me and some friends, cuz they're close with Mo, but he just ended up talking there.
Yeah.
And
was that the one with Chappelle?
No, that was him just for like we were just like on the White House like outside Congress protesting ceasefire for Palestine and he talked and it was beautiful, and then he did a show that night at the Comedy Loft and he talked for like an hour and a half, and it was like beautiful.
He's a deep hearted dude.
But
like I think that when you're dealing with people that come from communities, ethnic communities or a different heritage or immigrant story, you know, there's something important about those shows in terms of, you know, what America looks like and what being an American is, right?
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, when I watch, like, Reservation Dogs or Rami's show or even Mo's show, like, you know, I'm a pretty open-minded guy, but I don't know anything about that life. And it's a life that's built on, you know, a community that's existed for thousands of years, and now they're here, and how they kind of, how they hold their families together. But there's a sense of history. Whereas, like, basic white people, what do you got?
Nothing.
So that's what your show's going to be about?
Yeah. You know, I always joke, I say, I almost had community. You know, if Genghis Khan had made it to Europe, we would all have community right now.
Sure, yeah.
But
it's a weird thing, though, to be untethered from a sense of history or community.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you find, like, certain things to, like, be involved with. And it's, like, you know, similar to, like, people finding that, like, Dungeons and Dragons and, like, people that like that. Like, I think those things exist and are important, and they're, like, you know, they're, like, watering holes of, like, culture that, like, people do need. And, like, we are losing as we get more and more isolated from the internet and, like, them driving us apart.
Right.
And, like, even, like, comedy and, like, people being fans of you and going to your shows, like, I think they find, like, peace in that.
Yeah.
And, like, your voice brings them ease, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, like, under fascism, I'm, like, you have to have those voices and people to go to and to, like, you know, speak when you are scared or you're worried and you need to be comforted. Like, that is so important. And it's like all those voices. And that's why it's like terrible that, like, you know, to end DEI and like make that a villainous thing. It's because there's all these kinds of people and they like need somebody. And that's what like representation is all about.
Right.
And to not understand that or push back on that. And, you know, to have a platform and platform people that are against it when you're, you should be somebody who's bringing everybody in. And it's like, you create this, like, you know, like Tony Hinchcliffe, like this evil, like making fun of people, bullying, and like your community is built around like being mean to people. It just drives me crazy, man. And I'm like, this isn't what I got into this for. It's to be associated with those people.
Yeah.
And like association is always my issue, especially in comedy now. And I'm just like, I want to like, you know, support those who like care about people, and like that's what we should be doing, and that's like what someone like yourself is to me. So
Well thanks, sorry
and for the rant,
but it's okay. No, and the same with Mo too, is that like, you know, you diminish when you silence people or marginalize them, you diminish the possibility of progress, and also just, you know, different points of view. Like, these people are so uncomfortable with people that are different than them that they resent them, and then eventually they hate them. And then they want him to shut up or be gone.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, then we're at this fucking juncture. And it's weird because a lot of the people who were, you know, 75 million people didn't vote for that guy. They voted for the other person.
Yeah.
And so they're out there. But, you know, there's such a constant, like, assault of propaganda that, like, they're like, to silence somebody, it happens within them.
I just don't know why you can't like more than one thing.
Dude, they're just,
you know, what I'm saying, though? Yeah,
they're threatened. You know, it really comes down to, you know, white people feeling like they're not going to be in charge anymore, or they're going to be a minority.
Yeah.
It's so fucked up. But, like, I appreciate what you're saying, that there is something about entertaining the people that are like-minded. You know, like, I'm not, like, fundamentally a leader of any kind. I'm not going to go out there and try to start a march necessarily.
No.
But I think I can.
But you would be at one if you were invited and you believed in it.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there is this idea that, like, even in hopelessness, that, you know, I think I guess I do this instinctively, but I'm trying to be more aware of it, that there is a need for a release or to have that sense of like-minded people around you. Like, it's really weird because in the first Trump administration, I felt like, you know, I'd do these shows and I'd be like, well, this is a safe space. We can talk here, you know?
Yeah. I remember this. I remember it was just like, it was like funny. It's not really anymore. It's not.
No.
It was funny. I always think that, though. It's like, you know, going back to when, like, you know, when it was like I was maybe like the worst person in the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You know, like, and that's so, I'm so far removed from like being a dick to anyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But what a pleasant time that was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it was good talking to you, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. There you go. Gavin Matz, he's in season 4 of Hacks, which is now streaming on Max. And also his comedy special Progression is available on YouTube. Hang out for a minute.
Im Geschäftsleben erwartet man, dass der Zahlungsverkehr so einfach wie möglich ist. Und genau das ist er jetzt auch. Mit Visa Direct. Jetzt können Sie Zahlungen zwischen mehr als 195 Ländern, 160 Währungen und über 11 Milliarden Karten, Konten und Wallets empfangen, halten, umrechnen und senden. Ganz einfach und sicher. Sorgen Sie dafür, dass Ihr Geldverkehr zu Ihrem Business passt. Weitere Informationen unter visa.com/visa-direct.
Hey people, if you liked Monday's episode with Peter Weller, there's an extra 20 minutes of me and Peter available exclusively for Full Marin subscribers.
You know, as long as governments tilt, this is his quote, tilt quixotically to the top of the pyramid to solve a narcotics problem,
yeah,
you know, they're lost. Because the bottom of the pyramid, the junkie on the street, is the thing that must be handled.
Yeah. You know, interesting.
Yeah. How many people you're going to bust? How many people you're going to bust? How many people you're going to bust?
Yeah.
Fine. You're just taking chips off the top of the pyramid. Who cares?
Yeah, and using that as a cudgel to take more power. I mean, even now with fentanyl, the idea we're going to close these, that the big problem with Canada is that there's fentanyl coming in. There's like 10 guys ever bringing fentanyl over, but it's a port, it's a place of entry for Trump to have a conversation about taking over Canada.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But
it's leverage.
That's the word. To get that Peter Weller bonus episode along with all the bonus episodes we do twice a week, sign up for the Full Marin. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And remember, before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Guitar time. Monkey and La Fonda. Cat angels everywhere.